Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
I now wish to salute and recognize our Chancellor of UCSB, Henry Yang. Henry, would you please take the podium?
Good afternoon. And I'm just honored and delighted to be here to welcome, what should I describe, a galaxy of stars of the in the architecture field. When I heard the introduction, I just felt I'm just humbled that how am I going to be able to deliver this welcoming remark. But we are just so glad that you can, such a collection of distinguished international guests can visit our campus to have this conference entitled Geography, Tradition, and Individual. What a beautiful title. And with a focus on the case of modern Greek architecture. We are so honored and pleased just to host this, and along with this beautiful weather. But from Greece, this weather probably doesn't mean much to you. I would especially like to acknowledge Jim and Sarah Adjoropoulos for their generous gift to establishing the James and Sarah Adjoropoulos Endowed Chair in Hellenic Studies, and also the James and Sarah Adjoropoulos Endowed Program in Hellenic Studies. It is this program that support makes this conference possible. So as a chancellor, I know to acknowledge the sponsor is always the first order of my responsibility. Let's give Sarah applause. The Adjoropoulos Endowed Funds support the study of and dissemination of classical and modern Greek culture at UC Santa Barbara. So pleased to welcome Sarah and Jim later on today. Sarah is also a trustee of the UC Santa Barbara Foundation. This foundation helps us to set the vision and the guidance and also the fundraising for the future. And Jim and Sarah are parents to Nicholas and Alexander. Alexander is a sophomore here at UC Santa Barbara. This past summer, I had the honor of traveling with Margaret Spellings, the Secretary of Education, to South America. Wherever we go, she said she would like her to be introduced as the mother of two college daughters. So now I said, why you wanted to be introduced that way? She said, whatever I say something, people always argue with me. But when I say this title, nobody argue with me. Not only that, she said that when we went to college, we see this college charge this huge fees, and I don't know what they do. And I don't know there's no consumer's report. I don't know how we pay this for. So I said, we better have some assessment, have some accountability. So we need to have this a book to accounting for each, assess each university to see what they do. So we know we can shop around to find the right universities. So when she talked to me about that, Sarah, I thought of you. And you are mother of two nice college boys. And we are honored to have Professor Apostolos Athanasakis as the holder of this distinguished chair and also as co-organizers of this conference. In addition, we would like to thank Vala Tsona, chair of our Department of Philosophy and a co-organizer of this conference. You know how much it takes to organize a conference like this. There's hundreds of details. But once when you get it done, you will not want to trade this experience for anything else. It's just a sweet labor. I would also like to welcome Helen Vrenioti, the press counselor of the Consul General of Greece. And I would also like to welcome and thank our friends from the Santa Barbara chapter of the American Institute of Architects, and also the Architectural Foundation of Santa Barbara, who are actively participating as sponsors of this very special event. I want to say thank you. And we must also acknowledge the Interdisciplinary Humanity Centers for co-sponsoring this conference, and thank you. I would also like to take this opportunity to share with you one of the architectural treasures on our campus, housed at our University Art Museum, is a top collection of architectural records containing over 750,000 original drawings. This valuable resource is in the process of being digitized so that it will be available to you and me online in the future. And we are all beneficiaries of this great tradition of Greek architecture. I know that the next 2 days will be filled with engaging presentations and conversations with some of the leaders in the field. And I want to thank you for making this possible, and especially to Jim and Sarah again. At this time, I would like to have the honor to invite David Marshall, our Dean of Humanities and Fine Arts, as well as Executive Dean of the College of Letters and Science, to come to the podium. Thank you.
Well, I'm just going to add a few words to offer my welcome, and I won't repeat all the thank yous and acknowledgments that the Chancellor has so cogently made, just to save time, but we are very grateful for everybody's help and sponsorship and organization of the conference. And we're really glad that you have come out today. We know that for some people on campus, this is a holiday weekend, but I know that over the next 2 days, there are going to be people coming and going and really benefiting from the high level of conversation that will be taking place. This really is a remarkable assemblage of distinguished scholars and architects and experts. And as Dean of Humanities and Fine Arts, I'm very aware of the centrality of these discussions. The humanities and the arts are situated at the core of the great liberal arts tradition that exemplifies higher education in the United States. And we all know that this tradition has its roots in the classical traditions of philosophy and history and rhetoric, aesthetics, music, art, and architecture. We have many fine scholars of the classics here in several different departments, and the Chancellor mentioned our architecture and design collection, which is one of the largest repositories of architectural records in the United States. But most importantly, perhaps, the Argyropoulos Endowed Chair and Endowed Fund in Hellenic Studies were created on the principle that recognizing the ancient world as a crucial source for much of our scholarship, or as a foundation for our whole educational enterprise, includes the conviction that classical culture is not static. It's not just a museum. It's not a dusty archaeological site, although we like dusty archaeological sites. It's a vibrant tradition that's renewed and reinvented in the modern world, in a global society that needs the humanism and the wisdom and the artistic vision of the Hellenic Greeks. So focusing on the continuous process of reinvention of the 3,000-year-old Greek architectural tradition on the merging and perhaps even clashing of ancient and modern, this conference, I think, in many ways exemplifies the ways in which the arts and the humanities represent both the past and the future. So we're really glad that you're here, and I look forward to hearing about the many interesting conversations that take place over the next couple of days. So thank you.
Thank you, David. I will be, have to be, swift here. I want to offer thanks to Nicole Clanfer of the Office of Development, to Gretchen Falvo for everything she has done of the Office of Public Relations. And I want to offer heartfelt thanks to my own assistant, Kathy Kelly, who is seated in the audience. just a few words as an introduction to the conference now. The obvious. I have no competence in the area of architecture. I'm not an architect. I admire the art with abiding passion for everywhere I go. I think about architecture because architecture contains us and surrounds us everywhere. Yet, simple and sincere modesty alone forbids me to speak of architecture in modern Greece. I'm so very eager to learn from this unique constellation of specialists assembled here today. One of the oldest myths of Greece, it has to do with an architect, as I suppose everybody knows, Daedalus, the Athenian architect who went to Crete and put himself in bonded service to the powerful king of Crete, and eventually had to build a huge jail, a prototype, a proto-jail, the labyrinth, in which the monster born of the queen had to be, the Minotaur had to be confined. Think about that. Architecture can do those, did those things and can do them today, can imprison space, people, and everything. But think also of the fact that Daedalus is the man, the architect, who outfitted his son, Icarus, with wings so his son could fly up into freedom and into the sun. But alas, as you know, he flew too close to the sun. His wings melted and he fell into the sea. There are lessons in all this. Architecture can confine, but architecture can give us freedom, enormous freedom. It is so valuable and so very important. But I speak for ancient Greek culture, permit me. Architecture, too, in its magnificence and power, has to observe proper limits of harmony, I suppose, and due measure. With that, I welcome our guests from Greece, their colleagues here, and everyone else, and I want to just invite the professors who have come from Greece to come up to the table for a panel discussion. Yeah, please.
I would like to welcome you all. Thank you very much for coming, and we are very much looking forward to your talks and to the panels, of course.
Welcome. We have about an hour and a quarter for this panel. Actually, it's 3:15, so we have about an hour for it, and I think that we could probably get in that time, I'm hoping, two questions answered, though more questions, maybe. Well, that's very ambitious, too, in that much time. Though more questions may be asked, I think, than answered. I thought I'd start out with the most general one possible. I think almost everybody here, whether you're an architect or not an architect, must know that classical Greek architecture is central to the development of the Western architecture tradition. And though the classical orders, for many years, of course, were the canonical standards of beauty in the West. That essentially ended sometime in the 18th century. And it's very interesting to see now, in fact, what's happened to Greek architecture in the last several centuries. And the subject of this panel is supposed to be trends in Greek architecture. So I'd like to invite the panelists, starting with Spiros and Morgas, to talk about what they see as the current trends in Greek architecture. Spiros? And I'd like to ask everybody to talk for about 3 minutes each in this round, if we could manage that. Very ambitious.
Well, thank you. Thanks also all the previous speakers. You were kind enough to say a few words about us. And thank the organizers for inviting us. In 2 minutes, I'd already wasted 1 minute, but in 2 minutes, I see the same dangerous trends that I see internationally seeping also in Greece. I feel that architecture has been a victim of commercialization, you know, this consumer attitude that, you know, things must change, odd things out are what are expected. And looking at some of these very interesting structures per se, you know, that we see built in some countries which can afford nowadays to invest heavily, especially in the Gulf area, you know, they seem to, these are all interesting as objects in themselves, but nevertheless, you know, I think they have moved out of the main course that architecture is supposed to serve. One thing is to provide comfort, shelter, and comfort for the humans that they live in them and operate inside the buildings, but at the same time, you know, architecture contributes heavily towards the formation of the urban environment. As long as we believe that we are social beings, the urban environment is a very, very sacred ground. I think I'll stop at this point, you know, just pausing and
passing. You've got another minute, Spiros. But you're going to pass it on?
Well, you know, okay, then I'll conclude, if you like, you know, by identifying what I mean by in terms of the quality of the urban environment and the role of architecture. The buildings, according to me at least, you know, they can be divided into two categories, you know, broad categories. One is the category of buildings that work with each other to form the urban fabric, the urban scene, to identify the street scale, the passages that we move in, and the other category of buildings, which are special buildings that can be objects in space. They are landmarks. They are like the Opera in Paris, which is at a point, a focal point where various streets meet. It can be a city hall. It can be a public building. Instead of that, you know, and Los Angeles is a pretty good ground, you know, with Wilshire Boulevard, you know, where we have the destruction of the continuity of a street with the antagonism of objects in space. And so, you know, I see the dangers of architecture which is extravagant and it catches the eye, as opposed to the architecture which serves, you know, a number of values. And so, you know, that's really what I'm saying, you know, that I feel that there are some danger in the trends that are seeping in, as well as in Greece. And I'll stop at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Spiros. Eleni?
Yes.
Maybe you want to take that microphone. I think you have to pull it fairly close in order for it to work.
It is an honor and a pleasure to be with you today, and I'd like to thank in particular Professors Apostolos Athanasakis and Voulatsouna for the warm support and hospitality. My younger colleagues are more qualified to present the trends and directions of Greek architecture on the eve of the 21st century. Being an historian, I will try to give you an idea of three ideological and cultural topics that influence somehow the course of architecture in 20th century Greece, about which we shall speak tomorrow. Those are the legacies or traditions of Athenian neoclassicism and the modern movement, as well as the sentimental attachment of Greeks to the anonymous architectural traditions. Athenian neoclassicism was the dominant style of urban architecture in Greece, both public and residential, throughout the 19th century. It started officially during the reign of King Otto of the Wittelsbachs, when a strongly central European neoclassicism was transplanted to Athens and to the main towns of the newly created Greek state. The Greek state was created in 1827, after the Greek Revolution. Athenian neoclassicism was then a modern style established by the country's economic, intellectual, and political elite, who consciously addressed Europe both as the enlightened agent of progress and as the inheritor of Greece's classical past. Athenian neoclassicism offers a platform for debate. Its proponents would praise it as a belated renaissance or revival of Greece's glorious architectural past, as a bold cultural and aesthetic endeavor to civilize rural Greece by transplanting to its soil the neoclassical urban vocabulary of Europe with all its concomitant baggage. Measured in aesthetic terms, 19th century neoclassicism in Greece was a prolific one. The output of European and Greek masters, such as the Hansen brothers and Lysanus Kaftantzoglou, as well as of anonymous builders, has consistently borne the stamp of quality and moderation. From a cultural standpoint, Athenian neoclassicism was a brutal interruption of the local and slowly evolving Byzantine and post-Byzantine tradition, which embraced the vernacular architecture of the Greek people produced in the multinational Byzantine and Ottoman empires from 3030 after Christ until the revolution approximately of 1821. The reaction against Athenian neoclassicism and the other European styles that succeeded it was culturally motivated by a movement, the so-called Return to the People Roots movement, which started in the 1880s by intellectuals and writers. The wind of reverence for vernacular architecture blew from the first decade of the 20th century and flourished in the 20s and 30s. The neo-vernacular or populist movement, which was headed by the German-educated architect Aristoteles Zachos and transformed by Professor Dimitris Pikionis in the National Technical University of Athens, also offered a platform for debate. Its proponents considered it as a healthy resistance to the West's cultural imperialism and as a salutary search for national identity. From an aesthetic point of view, the neo-vernacular movement was an imperfect antidote to cosmopolitan conformism. It appealed and still appeals to a number of Greek architects and to the majority of their clients, especially in the case of residential architecture and architecture in traditional settlements. For its opponents, this neo-romantic movement would be denigrated as an escapist approach to contemporary architectural problems and as a parochial reproduction of forms irretrievably rooted in the past ways of life. I won't speak more about the modern movement because we shall have the opportunity to speak about it tomorrow. Okay.
Thank you, Eleni. And Dimitris?
I'm a little bit more optimistic than Spiros was. I believe in recent years there is a growing interest among architects, especially among younger architects, throughout the world for the problems that our cities and, of course, our planet are facing. Strategies against global climate change and efforts for sustainable architecture and development of cities are the dominating subject of current urban design debate. The subject of urban and regional planning oscillates between the extremes of scientific issues such as the reasons of global warming, future deficits in natural resources, alternative energy systems, demographic change and health condition, and from the other hand, the unscientific romantic issues such as the new euphoria for urban life, the disdain for suburban sprawl, the inhabited rural landscapes, etc. In my view, architecture struggles with issues like sustainability and after a long period of euphoria returns to questions such as why invent more and more complex systems? Who benefits from a fully transparent building with automatic climate and light control? Architecture in this context is understood as a means of solving technological and socio-economic issues larger than life. This shift of interest is obvious to the works of colleagues, for example, in New Orleans or in the work of the recently burned area of Greece that Professor Polalis will present us tomorrow morning. Another proof for this shift of interest from the building to the city and to the society is the change of the focal point of architectural events such as the International Architectural Exhibition in Venice, La Biennale di Venezia, for example, which last year the main topic was architecture and society, and also from the last WIA convention. WIA is the International Union of Architecture. A last comment, which is related to our conference. I believe that tradition, and I'm referring to our universal architectural tradition, has a lot to teach us about sustainability, economic use of materials that were always in harmony to the fundamental needs of the people, to the climate, and to all the other parameters that influence architecture.
Thank you. George.
I would like to distinguish first between building and architecture, and I would suggest to distinguish these two because each one addresses different issues. Building addresses practical issues, architecture addresses maybe more spiritual issues, and I would like to stress this because according to the criteria we use, a different answer we are going to get. So if architecture is about a surplus of meaning and building is about technique or structure and so on, we will classify the possible current trends in a different way. Until a few years ago, we were classifying trends according to style. I would say that nowadays there is only one style in Greek architecture, which is a kind of neo-historicism. historicism including the modern movement as well. That is, there are architects who revisit not just classical architecture or vernacular architecture, but even the modernist architecture itself, which is somehow a contradiction in terms, since modernism was supposed or was actually rejecting tradition and any kind of revisiting. So it's not about style anymore, it's about agendas, I think. And among these agendas, I would like to draw your attention to this issue of sustainability that also Dimitris Issaias mentioned. The issue of urban life nowadays there is a very different situation, even in Greece. Life is centered in cities. There is no longer concentration in the periphery and the countryside. So we are talking about an urban architecture and the urban problems which have to be resolved in different ways than before. So there is another trend focusing on urban life and urban architecture. And then there is also the world of digital architecture and new media, a kind of paper, let's say, architecture. I'm using a term of the 80s, a kind of virtual architecture, which is also a new trend in Greece, just as it is all over the world, I guess. So to make a long story short, one is neo-historicism in all its breadth, in all its wide spectrum. Then an architecture of agendas, including sustainability and urban life. And then the architecture of new media and the digital world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Spiros.
The faraway Spiro.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. To repeat, the question is to talk about the trends in Greek architecture.
Yes, or yes. Whatever you
Greece
like.
And right?
Greece and international, yeah. Right. I want to repeat this because this is a very big question. And let me try to answer it with one-liners. First of all, let me say that I'm very optimistic. Then let's say that what is interesting is we have to look at the young people. And the young people in Greece are not very different than the young people at Harvard or in Stuttgart or in Delft. I would say probably they are equally qualified in Greece, and they understand the issues very, very well. So in terms of the young generation, I would say that the trends are very similar to the ones we see all over the world, which means that the young architects really want to help solve problems as opposed to deal with forms and impressions. And it was mentioned before by my colleagues, quality of urban life, sustainability, the environment, but also attention to the users of architecture. It's something that it is very much in the center of their agenda. Now, that by itself would not be enough if in Greece we had not observed that the best students these days want to be architects, which is very, very positive news. I always believe that universities are good, but they're as good as the students they get. So if the best and the brightest study architecture, then there is one more reason to feel more comfortable about the future of architecture. And this may be the result of what has happened recently in Greece, that names like Calatrava, for the wrong reasons, has become a household name. Even grandmothers know who he is. And that has attracted students, but I believe that it's a very noble profession, as has been for many years, and this is all but good. I'm going also to say that architects, in general, are reflective practitioners. So all over the world, they do not really set the policies, but they follow the policies. In Greece, we had the unfortunate period, I would say after 1960, that the politicians who, by the way, continue until today, they're very short-minded. And they do not understand what they legislate. And then architects, responding to that legislation, they create objects that they are not proper for the society. Recently, this has started changing. And I would say that what we need to see is more change in the legislation so that architects can do the buildings that they should do. And recently I have heard politicians, and I'm going to mention among others the mayor of Athens, who simply start talking about demolishing areas of Athens and rebuilding. Actually, we should be quite open about it. What is really of value is the land and the location and the climate. Are not necessarily all the buildings that have been built. So I'm looking forward to the time that we're going to start erasing some errors of after 1960, and we start doing what we should do there. And there is a large piece of land in Athens right now, which is the old airport, that gives the hope that some open-minded politicians are going to see the opportunity, and we're going to see Athens making another big step forward, something that did not exactly happen, but happened partially at the time of the Olympics. Now, one good thing about Greece also is that we have a very strong bureaucracy. And I see that's good because the strong bureaucracy prevents doing large-scale mistakes, allows small-scale mistakes, and then because everything takes very long time, we have not destroyed the entire country yet. So that is also good because when the vision changes and it's in the process of changing, then we're going to see very many important things happening there. And the other thing I would like to say is that the buildings that are being built these days, when they're built in historic settings, they respect the period that they were built. We see the use of old materials, older techniques. We see the traditional villages being restored really very well. And I will have the opportunity to show some slides tomorrow of places like Monemvasia or other places that the quality of work is really amazing. And at the same time, in places that there is no historic context, at the same historic context, like in Athens, we see much more interesting buildings coming up than what we saw in the 70s. But the same is true about the United States. Actually, we should not be critical only about Greece. Look at what the federal government did to this country in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Look at the buildings they built and look what they are doing today. And it's a turn in architecture all over the world, and Greece is part of it. And at the same time, Greeks are very much involved in building elsewhere. Simply elsewhere, the lots are bigger and the commission's more lucrative than in Greece as it stands right now. And I would like just to conclude. I'm very optimistic about the trends of Greek architecture as seen through primarily through the young Greek architects.
Thank you, Spiros. And Panayotis?
Panayotis. Diatra.
Was I close? Please.
Diatra, thank you for the question. I'll try to answer my way. I thought I understood you were asking about the fate of classical orders and Greek architecture. I mean classical Greek architecture in modern times. To answer this, I would like first to thank people from the Department of Classical Studies and Greek Philosophy for inviting us to discuss modern Greek architecture, what means to go to the other side of the same coin and discuss the same problems of architecture, both sides. I will begin with Professor Athanasakis' initial introduction of the first architect, first Athenian architect, who was Daedalus. Daedalus, who had to leave Athens because of a murder and go to Crete to become the architect of the king, what means the architect of the power. Then he was able first to invent the really functional building, the jail, the labyrinth, what means to design a building fitting perfectly to its function. Second to this, he has been able to design the liberator machine, what means the flying machine, being able to free people from his jail, so he had been twice, let's say, genius, and he escaped from his king, from the power. The third was maybe most important. He was able to invent thermal baths, and then he was able to give death, a hot death, in these thermal baths to his king, Minos, freeing himself forever from the power of the state at this period. Let's say, just to close here, my first comment, that architecture can be inventive, but it can be dangerous as well.
Sounds like what you said. Thank you all for establishing a beginning to this extremely big question about recent trends or current trends in Greek architecture. One of the interesting things about all your answers was really that they were so international in focus that most of you identified issues that are really everywhere now, not just in Greece. Issues about sustainability, urban life, and, you know, the object versus the place seemed to be universal. It was also nice to hear that somebody's optimistic, thank you, Spiros, right, about that, and that optimistic about the young people. But if we all teach, I think we have to be optimistic about the young people. But it does lead me to the question that the second question that I wanted to ask, which is really about the international trends as they've come to Athens really recently. I remember a cartoon in the New Yorker magazine, it must be 15 years ago now, there was a couple in a travel agency, and they were looking at posters from all the major cities of the world, Sydney, Australia, and Tokyo, and London, and all the posters looked exactly the same. That was the joke, right? And that was quite a while ago. They're all kind of anonymous high-rises designed by famous architects, and right, there's something about loss of place in that. And there's been a very interesting recent phenomenon. Of course, in architecture, it's known as the Starkitects, or the Star Architects, or Starkitecture. And this idea that Calatrava, which Spiros has already mentioned, is building everywhere, and of course, built significantly for the Olympics in Greece, the recent Olympics that were held there. The recent competition for the Museum on the Acropolis was won by Bernard Schumi, a French architect who also has built in many places. And I'm wondering if everyone would care to comment on this phenomenon, this kind of internationalization and the Starkitecture phenomenon, and how it really has affected contemporary Greek architecture. Spiros?
Well, maybe it can be random.
Okay.
You know, yes,
so,
I mean, whoever wants to answer first. You
know. I'd like to add to the trends Jorgo said. Mm-hmm. There is also a trend heritage architecture, especially industrial
heritage,
the protection of heritage architecture, which has become a big business in Greece. Lots of people invest on that, and although they try to save the buildings, sometimes they disfigure them. I'm a little bit pessimistic. Also, there is a trend, a need for character. Besides globalization, there is a need to keep the character or create buildings with a certain character. Is it so that Judith would not find...
I'm going to say, I think that's actually another international trend that we can probably identify everywhere.
Yes.
I think, Spiros, you're going to take the...
Yeah.
And then I think Panagiotis will have
a
response.
I sounded pessimistic. I have to now. I'm not apologizing. Of course, I see the positive, but I'm worried about the negative. And the negative, as you correctly pointed out, is more or less international. You know, it's coming from everywhere. Look at what the media are projecting. You know, I mean, and so, you know, it's the exuberant, and this is what's going on. You know, and I remember a famous and excellent and very skillful American architect, I'd rather leave it anonymous, you know, who had been often visiting our school, lecturing here in Los Angeles. And back in the 70s, he always used to explain the rationale of his work. You know, he used to say, this is the logic, these are my criteria, these are the objectives, and so on. And when we do that as architects, as practicing architects, you know, the client sometimes says, my God, that's logic. I mean, I could have thought that. And, you know, in a way, you know, there is no mystique. I mean, you are paying a fee to get something that you, is supposed to be something you don't understand enough and therefore is a specialist, like the mystique when you go to the doctor, you know, and you don't know how your body works and they tell you this, that, you know, and take these pills and this medicine and you feel very good and you pay and you go. And so with architecture, you know, when you explain things logically, and I'll make a little parenthesis here, you know, when I was rather young and coming back from England, I thought it was my duty to be as logical and as objective as possible. And this client wanted to have a Georgian house in the middle of the Greek countryside. And I kept saying, you can't, you know, the climate, this, that. But I want a round window above the main door, you know, and a flamboyant type, you know. And I said, that's expensive, you know, it'll be custom-made, you can't put a curtain, you'll have the sun coming in. And at some point, you know, he and his wife insisted, and I threw my hands and I said, but damn it, that's not even aesthetic. And they stopped and said, oh, why didn't you say it from the beginning? Coming back now, I was saying before about this colleague who I respect highly, you know, nowadays when he presents his work, he doesn't say that. He says, you know, I was walking down the beach and I saw this kelp move, you know, entangled like that, and I found it very interesting. And then I went to the office and I took a piece of paper and crumbled it, and then I got one of my assistants to do a model, and every day I was spending a quarter of an inch, you know, I mean, I was moving it here, there, and so on. And so, you know, this object-oriented and object-creating, you know, I think it's dangerous as a trend. That's all I'm pointing and saying, you know, we should come to a consensus of some values. You said about, you know, the social aspect of creating an urban environment, you know, where people can feel happy, can feel safe, they can get a sense of orientation, you know. And it's all right, you know. Sometimes plans, for example, you know, would look very interesting as plans. And I always told students when I was teaching, saying, well, it's only a helicopter pilot and God that can see it this way, you know, the way you will see it from below, you know. So my concern is really that, you know, there isn't a very clear sense. I mean, we correctly said sustainability, of course, you know. But at the same time, although we know that I think in the United States, I don't remember the figures exactly, but the biggest spender of energy is actually artificial lighting. It's not even heating. And yet, you know, we become oblivious to that, you know, still, you know, you know, the way we design, we don't use natural light, things that we have been respecting in the past. And so my concern is, you know, the lack of consensus on the values that architecture should serve, you know. Sorry, I took a bit longer.
No, just, we no longer have our strict time limits for this portion of the thing. But, we don't have to go in order, but if somebody would like to respond.
To the second question.
Yeah, to the second question, sure. Please go ahead.
Okay. You said to me?
Yes. Well, it could be anyone.
Speaking about the Museum of Tsoumi, first of all, I don't think that the museum is one of the buildings that will help Bernard Tsoumi to be remembered as a significant architect of our time. Mm-hmm. It's not the case. It's not one even of his best buildings. The main concept of this building, this turn of the upper volume to face Parthenon, is at least a naive expression of a focal point with very poor architectural value. The dialogue the museum is trying to establish with the Acropolis and the surrounding area is a high-volume monologue, actually. There are a lot of things that an architect might say. I will not. Because I have the impression that by discussing them, we miss the real problem that exists in this project. The problem existed before Tsoumi's design. The idea, a political and ideological idea, endorsed by all the Greek political parties and prominent political figures to create such a big and significant building in this particular area of Athens at the proximity of the Acropolis is mainly responsible for what we mainly dislike about the new museum. The reasons of that grandiose idea have to be traced to what, as I know, Professor Tournikiotis' presentation about the making of Athens that he will present us tomorrow, the making of Athens archaeological site and the aesthetics of historical stratification. Did I say it correctly?
Yeah.
Something like that. So it's a kind of teaser for tomorrow's presentations that all of you have to come.
Just to say that I will begin with Tsoumi Museum tomorrow as well.
Okay, that's good. The scale of the project is totally disproportionate to the scale of the neighborhood and the actual site of the monument. This was the reason, as I believe, that three architectural competitions the last 30 years were unsuccessful before Tsoumi's design. So we might say that it was not Tsoumi's fault after all. But from the other hand, it would have been very interesting for the evaluation and the critique of someone's work and not only the catalogue of the building designed and or completed, but also a list of projects that someone refused to design.
Thank you. We want to just go in order because we seem to be doing that. Georgios, would you like to weigh in on this? Please.
I think I would go back to the question, which is to what extent the international star architecture has permeated Greece. I would like to mention that so far Greece has not been, in Greece, architecture has not been a public issue generally. It has not been an issue of prestige. Politicians have not employed architecture to promote themselves. It seems rather that they have preferred to have road building, harbor building, things like that in order to make their presence felt. It's general infrastructure that is preferred by them rather than architecture proper. So the attraction of foreign architects has been very marginal in Greece, with two exceptions actually, and a few minor ones that have been mentioned. That is the Olympic, the redressing of the Olympic Stadium in Athens by Calatrava, the new Acropolis Museum by Tsoumi, a couple of buildings by Botta with Greek associates, and Porphyrios, who is Greek, anyway. Yeah. I mean, all you have is less than 10 buildings all over Greece built by star architects. And I mean from the 60s on. Well, if we go back to the late 50s, we have the American Embassy by Walter Gropius. And that's about all.
Sarin and Serbo.
Yeah, but again, I mean, if you count them all, it's 10 or 12 buildings, no more. And why is that? Beyond the fact that it's not an issue of prestige, one aspect is that is the size, and then it's the possibility both of the capital and the building industry. The size of property, the size of capital is a limitation to any notion of inviting somebody who charges a lot and towards which aim. I mean, aims are unclear or are somehow diffused in more practical issues, and therefore there is no reason for star architects to be invited. I mean, Greece is still a country of the periphery in this star architects game.
May I add something to John?
Sure.
Public architecture in Greece is the weakest chapter of Greek architecture, contrary to residential, for example, architecture, or, tourist facilities, because a lot of capital is invested in these two architectural categories. Of course, it's also the mentality. The ruling classes are, I should say, not very keen to art. They're not sustaining the arts. They're not... and public architecture is not a political issue or a municipal issue. Not even an issue for the well-off people, I mean, for the sponsors. We didn't have any private, any important private building, did we?
Okay.
Well, some hotels, some office buildings, but not designed by... star architects. I think also, to the, your second question, a challenge for countries with an important architectural tradition is how you can reconcile modernity or the modern trends and tradition in order to at least in certain cases or in certain fields to have areas, districts, or buildings with a character.
Thank you, Lainey. And actually, that if we do have time for a third question, that relates to that one.
We have still to answer.
We still have Spiro and Panayotis. No, I haven't forgotten, even though you're quite far away. Spiros, you've already started.
I will answer first, and then Spiros will have decided.
Well, when you're down there, you acquire some independence, apparently, from the moderating end. That's fine. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I cannot see things so black as Eleni. I am personally not afraid of international architecture and not afraid of globalization. Let's begin with saying that always good architecture was international. Greek architecture was international. I mean, ancient Greek architecture, Roman architecture was international. Renaissance architecture was completely international, later on Baroque. When finally we had neoclassical architecture, I mean, at the period all over Western civilization, people were building classic Greek buildings, the Parthenon in New York, the Parthenon in Munich, the Parthenon in Edinburgh, we have done the same in Greece. So we had neoclassicism as well. We had international architecture, which was called international style, the modern architecture, international build. Postmodern architecture was international, and the last trend maybe can be the invention of heritage, the invention of regionalism, and the invention, if you like, of mondial architecture. Let's say that kind of frightened people with about architecture which could be the same all over the world. It was the same all over the world at every period. So don't be afraid of people coming to build their buildings in Greece, coming from other countries. We have done the same in many periods, and this could help to have good architecture as well.
Good. Let's.
Yes.
I didn't mean that you. I'm afraid of international architecture. I just meant that if you want character, if you don't want to have the same architecture over the world, then you might also address the issue that not all important architecture is international. Alvar Aalto, he produced some regional modernism. He's very important, and he's being reassessed lately as Frank Lloyd Wright, who was... in the limelight for years now, and he was not international modernist. Okay. So you have the tradition of the Enlightenment, which is international, which is rational, and which is in... you are right in that area, but you also have a more romantic tradition, a tradition that is more regional and which also produces very, very important buildings. So the one does not exclude the other. You can have both.
All right. Thank you. And Spiros has been patiently waiting.
Yes, actually, I'm going to move to the 21st century again.
Yeah.
I think that it's very good that we have star architects in Greece. And even if they had not come, we should invent them, because we're part of the international marketing and we need to be presented in the glossy magazines in order to exist. So what happens is the star architecture is just a big commercial game that simply serves the economies of the different countries. So from that perspective, it is necessary to happen in Greece, unless you want to be an isolated country not related to the Western world. Having said that, the star architects have realized it, and they give frequent lectures at the Megaron Musikis in Athens in a desperate effort to get more commissions. The issue is that the client, which is the Greek state, has not managed properly the star architect so far. That's why we see the problems that we see with the Sumi building. Let's take, for example, another case, which is the Bilbao Guggenheim Museum by Frank Gehry. And let's see how the Spaniards, and to be more precisely the Basques, managed Frank Gehry, as opposed to how the Greeks managed Sumi and Calatrava. The Spanish used Frank Gehry, a local architect here, actually a few hundred miles from where we stand right now in Santa Monica, and they said, we want a building by Frank Gehry, but it's going to be a Spanish building built with Spanish technology, with Spanish architects, with Spanish engineers and Spanish contractors. And they put next to Gehry very many people who eventually learn from Gehry, not his architectural style, but they learn the way of thinking, they learn how to do buildings, they use their own industry to produce materials that eventually are being sold all over the world, they use their own quarries that now export all over the world, and it became a positive cash flow for the local economy. Let's see how the Greeks did with Calatrava, who basically felt that it was going to the Orient, and he had full control, and he cared only about extraordinary fees that they were given to him without engaging basically anybody from the local community. Even the drawings by Calatrava's office to his collaborators were sent in such a way that it could only be printed, not changed anything, not even the letters. It was coming in Greek directly from Zurich. And this was the inability to manage the process. Not only that, but they gave only that particular project of the Olympics and everything else they gave to the contractors without paying attention to architects. So they did not pay any attention to develop human capital. And I think this is where is the line here. And Sumi had the opportunity to interact with very many young, capable people, but eventually he felt that he could decide on his own what he decided, and right now there is a big controversy about his building, and actually I'm not going to disagree with that it's not well received in the Greek society. So, bottom line, even if this would not happen, we should invent it. We need star architects. We need to develop star architects in Greece as well, so give the opportunity to develop the young people to act like this, and at the same time, we need to manage, because anything you leave unmanaged can go like a loose cannon in all different directions. Good.
And I know that Spiros has something that he wants to add to this.
Well, I was going to tease Spiros and say I thought he said he was an optimist, you know, because that's the reason why I was skeptic. That's the reason why I was skeptic when I sort of started off by saying the danger of trends, you know. You're absolutely right, Spiro. You know, the Spaniards were very smart in how they utilized this collaboration. But I was going to add also another thing, you know, that when Bush told Dukakis, you ain't no Kennedy, and I would say they ain't no Gehry also in this case, you know.
May I read just a month ago that the stars are losing their public and new trends are more trendy.
We already talked about the sustainability.
Yes. Anyway,
yeah,
And something else. For great architecture, to have good architects is not enough. You have to have equally good clients. And in many countries, the problem is the client. If you don't have a good client, you won't have proper architecture or proper management of gifted architects.
Yeah, Eleni, I think it's a good point. I know it's been made about it, but I thought I would emphasize this issue about the Stark attacks and versus this idea about sustainability in urban life, because Spiros really started with that, you know, with the kind of tension between object buildings and buildings that are about urban life. And Spiros, when you were talking about your optimism and what the young people are interested in, I mean, I see exactly the same trends here in Southern California, where the students are very interested in issues about sustainability, about urban life, and about social issues, which has not been true for a number of years. And there does seem to be a general trend internationally, at least among students and young architects, towards a much more integrated look, integrated professional practice of all kinds, teamwork, globalization, sustainability, urban life, and all of those things. And at the same time, those trends, which are international, seem to allow for the possibility, which, Eleni, you were alluding to, of much more regionalism. Because once you look at issues about sustainability in urban life, it could theoretically have much more to do with local conditions and sensitivity to climate. So I really wanted to end, because I think we have time for just one more quick round, about 2 minutes each, about a question about that, about really the young people in the future. And, you know, where do you see, you know, trends in Greek architecture, whether they sit right in the middle of international, if because of these legislative and policy issues, which seem to be fairly unique to Greek architecture, every country has its own politics, but Greek politics have always been very interesting. Of course, democracy comes from there, but democracy takes on a different form everywhere. Whether you see those issues, the policy issues, and these kind of international trends, how you see those coming together and what you see as the future, really, say in the next 20 years for architecture in Greece.
Well, it's not so easy to answer that, you know.
It's a big question.
Yes, because also there are differences in terms of social development. I mean, social attitudes, rather, the development of social attitudes. And, you know, Greece, I will speak later, you know, about some of those issues when I talk about Greece. But generally speaking, you know, I just want to point out that Greece had something like 60% of its active population were involved in the primary sector. In other words, they were farmers till 1960. And over a million Greeks had immigrated between 55 and 65 abroad, because they couldn't find jobs. You know, the agriculture was, the ownership was were very small. What I'm getting at is that, you know, in Greece, the sense of urbanity is slowly rising, and they wake up. And to my colleagues who may have another point of view, I want simply to point out, you know, that right now Athens, which is about 4 million people, is actually in danger of following the decline of the urban centers in the United States in the immediate post-war period. In other words, there is a kind of decentralization of a nucleus. Athens had a very strong central area, which was sort of the high cost living also, you know, I mean, the higher cost apartments and so on, you know, because people walked, you know, to the parliament, to the ministries, to this and that. And at the moment, you know, there's an awareness, you know, oh, new toys, you know, we sort of move things around. And so, you know, they are actually decentralizing central facilities, and there is a danger of collapsing the center. And considering that Greece also is a recipient of immigrants into the European Union, some of whom stay in Greece, you know, there's quite a large number for the size of the country, and they are now the people who are taking over the center, I see the same phenomenon that we saw in the United States, and how long it took and what resources. So in that sense, you know, there is a difference, time lag, in the awareness of what the hell is an urban environment. And so it's not so easy to respond or give an answer, you know. I think it's the duty of the architects simply to sort of make the public aware of those dangers, you know. Thank you.
Again, not a very optimistic response, Spiros, but...
I think one of the major problems for Greece and for Europe, I don't know for the States, is the immigration problem. We shall have tremendous housing problems in the future, and I don't know whether our architects are prepared or the state or the clients are prepared to face this. Unless they do so, I'm very pessimistic about the future of our urban centers, because this immigration, if they resort to unauthorized housing, then of course the situation can be out of control. So I don't know how, I cannot think about it. Are we, as professors or as responsible public servants, giving this problem the right attention?
I don't believe that it's all those changes, at least the major part of them, they need the social, they set social and economic problems, which are not problems that an architect can solve. This is a completely different kind of problems. I believe that this tendency, and I was talking earlier about sustainability, this shift from the building to the city, is true, and we are going to see it in future years. The other thing that's very difficult to answer about Greece is that there is a change in the way the buildings, especially the housing buildings, are being produced. Greece had a very peculiar way of financing housing. There was not a significant public sector. It was historically less than 4%, or somewhere around there. Sometimes it was around 1% of total investment was from public sector for housing, and the private sector had a completely different way of financing. It was a peculiar system where there is a co-partnership of the owner of the land and the developer. Not so. It's a remnant of pre-capitalistic ways of development. It's very difficult to talk about it in 1 or 2 minutes. The last 5 to 10 years, this system has reached his final point. There are changing about financing from the banks and things like that. That all this sector is under a way of completely changed to a new situation, which is very difficult to see how things are going to be in the future. The small developers that existed in Greece and who produced those buildings that are typical in Athens are dying. The new developers haven't come yet to the surface. There is a gray area over there. So it's very difficult to talk how things are going to be after 10 or 20 years in Athens. But generally speaking, the trends that the new architects are having today is those trends towards sustainability, solutions of the city problems, things like that.
In that direction. Thank you. Giorgio?
We have agreed here so far that young architects are better educated and better tuned with the international trends and agendas than ever before in Greece. The big issue for me is the professional rights the architects have, and then the ways that able architects can use or can take advantage of so as to come to the surface. in Greece, there is a very strong clientelist system. So if one wants to get a public commission, it's better to use indirect ways than enter competitions, which do not happen very often anyway. And then there is also this the same frame of mind permeates the private sector as well. So what is very important for me is to establish ways of giving opportunities to young people so as to manage to show what they can do. And that's why I believe that the most important issue in that sense is the reviewing of the legal framework that dictates the ways architecture is being produced in Greece, particularly as far as the architect's rights and duties are being concerned.
Very interesting. Thank you. Spiros?
Yes, actually, I think we should not ask more from the Greek architects than we ask from the American architects. And let's take another example. I always like to talk with examples. A few miles north in San Francisco, there is a new building by the for the federal government by Morphosis, Tom Main, which is supposed to be a signature building, star architecture, and at the same time a sustainable building. Supposedly it consumes 45,000 BTU per square foot per year, and it has natural ventilation, no air conditioning, and it has been designed to be a sustainable building. And this very same building has very many problems because the occupants don't like to work there. There is a lot of glare. The architect has not taken into account their individual needs. And the federal employees do not like the building. So although probably on the papers you have read that this is a very successful building, there are big fights going on as we speak, as opposed to the old building of 50 UN Plaza in the Civic Center of San Francisco, which has been vacated because it does not meet the seismic standards, and the employees really love to work in this old building that also was not air-conditioned and had double-loaded corridors and so on. So the issues are really very difficult, and we struggle to find answers, and Greece is part of the international community as we try to search what is going on, because there is something else. In architecture, and as architecture becomes more part of the public debate, as Professor Panetos mentioned earlier, and as architects want to be recognized for their work and they want to have a certain branding, they do not simply accept to do something like it was done many years ago. So they want to do something different, but it's something different, is experimental, because they do not have big research backing to look at every single detail, and very many times their experiments fail, but these experiments are large-scale experiments of hundreds of millions of dollars, and people have to live and work there. So the situation is as complex in Greece as everywhere else. I think that if there is anything we can say is that the people in Greece are aware as much as everywhere in the world. There is very good communication. There is effort to address those issues. In general, I see that younger people are more willing to be less, actually more low profile, less flamboyant than some older ones, and they are more willing to not actually to pronounce their name as much as others in order to achieve better architecture. And this may be a way to approach architecture, but again, within a certain limit, because architecture is an art, and it has to be recognized as such. And the balance between star architecture and sustainability, which I understand was the question for Greece as well, it's something that it's going to be studied and researched in the years to come. And again, I would say that students at Harvard and students in Greece are aware of those issues. And in my opinion, they approach it in the right way. But the problem is very, very, very difficult. Yep. Because architecture organizations are not big organizations with huge research budgets. They're not General Motors, which is good, by the way, because they do not hide things. They cannot hide things. So everything is up in the open. Thank you.
Kanioros?
We could close here, but I will say something.
Please.
Just the idea that there is somewhere in the world a periphery, and that this periphery should be Greece, and in other places there should be centers of activity, does not fit to my mind. I cannot see that periphery and that kind of necessity for regional architecture of the place or something which should not be international, should not contribute or participate to international ideas and international trends. When we are talking about trends, trendy things, we are not talking about sustainable architecture, which is not the same, has not to do with trends. I guess that our students, Greek students of the 21st century, feel European students and would like to make European architecture, which will be Greek. Greece is part of Europe. Why not? I don't think they wish to make, to produce, to invent something which would deliberately be different from Europe, something else, something going towards another direction, fortified, alone in the world. No, not really. So we are part of that world. We are working together with that work. We have the same problems in Athens and as you have in Harvard. Not exactly the same ideas, not exactly the same methods, but the problems are always the same. Then just another comment regarding the problem of star architecture and the problem of the client. I'd like to say that to have a star architecture, you need star clients as well and vice versa. And I would like to add that stars are part of our way of thinking mm-hmm. and understanding the world. We are making the stars. They do not exist by themselves.
Yes, Apostle.
Just a brief statement. Mm-hmm. Can you hear me?
I think so. I think we can hear you. I can always repeat it louder if they can. Right.
I just want to announce that we are stars, all of us. We're being filmed for UCTV, which can be distributed to 15 million people. I hope everybody's happy with the idea of being a star. And also to ask Judith, where do you feel there could be just a few minutes for questions from the audience, or how?
I think it's up to you, because if you think we have time, that would I think that would be great. We're supposed to end at 4:15, but... But I think the next thing on the keynote address is at 4:30. So if we're willing to not take a break, then I think we could ask questions for 10 minutes.
Maybe just even 5 minutes.
Yeah, okay. So why don't I take some questions from the audience? I think Barry has a...
I have a question and a statement. I don't know if this is working.
I think it is, yeah.
The question is that as I used to travel 30 years ago, I would recognize place by architecture, context, and historical references, and that I would love to travel places like Greece, go to the islands, Mykonos, Crete, you know, et cetera, and understand how civilization actually lived and the great palace of Knossos and such. And then in Japan, where I did a lot of work too, I loved the Japanese farmhouse, and I understood the country by its context. And as we look at star architecture, maybe that's going away. I'd like you to address that, and I feel that now we have icons and pieces that are in the community that don't have anything to do with an evolution, but more of a revolution. That's one. Two, sustainability. I want to ask two questions at once, if I may. Sustainability has to do, in my mind, with lifting the bottom up, of creating a social integration of people that essentially survive and make the place. And that we look at culture, diverse culture, and build that culture in architecture. I think the architect can work with that, particularly in housing. And one of the things that I'm really interested in is sustainability. Does that really mean something that's not permanent? Now, the Greek architecture of the past was permanent, and then it crumbled. Should the community be built of things that go away so our children and their children can replace and use again the land and buildings, materials to make new places? So is that sustainability?
Those are a lot of questions, and I thought, Spiros, as our keynote speaker, I thought maybe I'd give the first shot at that to you, and then anyone else who wants to jump in.
It's a loaded statement, if you like. I think I agree with you that, you know, when you said that when you went to places, you know, you recognized. And I think the way I see it, you know, that there may be some converging, because the world is converging in terms of the way we live, you know. And so, but at the same time, there are other things like the climate, the nature, that are very strong. And those things can help to differentiate. And I'm all in favor of, let's say, innovation and the search for innovation, but I don't believe that it should be a punch in the nose. And some of the buildings I was referring earlier are a punch in the nose. You know, they're sort of more a monument to the ego of the architect, you know, the opportunity to do something which nobody else has done before. And if it fits, it's fine. But quite often, I don't think it fits, you know. It's just as alien. So in that respect, I think that, and that's the difficulty, really, you know. And I'm very happy to hear that younger people, you know, are concerned about those values. Now, sustainability is a word that I had some difficulty because, you know, sustainability, it means sustainability. And what we refer by sustainability is reducing energy consumption, you know, finding some other ways to boost a little bit some of our energy needs or minimize the way we consume energy by air, fresh air, ventilation, and so on, you know. And it has to do the way, it has to do with the way we use words, because any human action on this planet is an anomaly to nature, to the system. So there's no ideal gesture that we can make. All we have to do is ideally to minimize the damage we do to nature. And I'm not saying we go back to the 60s and wear flowers in our ears and try to live in the caves, you know, but I think we should be aware that every gesture we make in terms of developing, you know, the human environment has a cost to nature, and so we should be aware of the alternatives and solutions that minimize that damage, you know.
Thank you. Maybe another question or two. I mean, yeah, and then we get a. Is there another question? We could do that. I can see that one of the somebody looks like a student has a question.
Well, I'm not a student anymore, but I just have a question similar to Mr. Berkus's. As educators in the field of architecture, do you feel the responsibility to, you know, produce architects that are, you know, respectable of the future, I mean the past, you know, the heritage, and that you guys, in, especially in Greece, or do you feel you want to, you know, nurture and produce architects that, you know, create new tradition or something along those lines?
Who would like to start?
I don't think that there is a way, even when you are an educator, there is no way to for. Creating architects, it's more complicated. And from the other hand, I don't think that heritage has something to do necessarily with tradition. Tradition is something that's changed. It's more vital than its heritage. I disagree. It's not the same. I don't feel that's the same thing. It's more complicated than that. I don't know if someone else.
George has one or two. George has one to say something.
I think the countries that have some.
I think George has. George.
No problem. Actually, I think that it's quite complicated, as Dimitris just said. On one hand, you have heritage as a cultural value. On the other hand, you have contemporary and future architecture, which is also another cultural value, and creativity. And then you have non-value architecture, mere building, which is just there, and you have to handle it. You have to face the fact that a lot of the area is built up, and so you have to do something with this. So it's three issues, actually. My view is that you have to combine all three, but to a different and varying extent. When you want to be an artist architect, you have to get inspiration and to study the precedents so as to understand what made these things masterpieces or whatever, or not. then you have to see the practical issues of handling the built environment. And then you have to combine the knowledge you get out of these two sectors towards the third, which is new architecture. So you have to handle them and play with them and combine them at varying extents according to the aim and according to the personality and the location and so on.
Thank you. And I think, Eleni, if you could give a very brief response to that, then we could take one more question. Eleni, did you want to say something?
Panayotis here has a comment.
Sorry.
Yes. I had a comment. Let's begin with what Professor Panetto said. I guess there are no three directions. There is only architecture, which is invention, and mere building, which can be called tradition if architects would like to call mere building tradition. It's exactly what happened in Greece. A traditional architecture in the Heat Age was mere building, built by everybody, and was called, defined later as tradition. In that sense, I'd like to answer your question by saying that tradition is something we are inventing in the present when we would like to address our past. We cannot educate people on tradition. We can just educate them to make architecture, and they will discover their tradition.
I did not talk about tradition, however. I did not use this word at all.
But me and building.
Building, yes.
I'm very here to give the impression that I am putting pressure on myself and you. We don't have so much time. We don't want to tire everybody up because we have more coming up. Is there another question?
Oy.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just want to thank all the panelists. We'd like to clap for you. Thank you. Thank you for that really interesting introduction to, you know, both current and future trends in Greek architecture. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.